Good evening. I'd like to call the May 17th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chuck?
Here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Ferreira has asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
And I have two proclamations here, and I believe I recognize the relevant staff people in the back. First, Mental Health Awareness Month in Tompkins County. Whereas mental health is essential to everyone's overall health and well-being, and whereas all Americans experience times of difficulty and stress in their lives, and whereas prevention is an effective way to reduce the burden of mental health conditions, and whereas there's a strong body of research that supports specific tools that all Americans can use to better handle challenges and protect their health and well-being, and whereas mental health conditions are real and prevalent in our nation, and whereas with effective treatment, those individuals with mental health conditions can recover and lead full productive lives, and whereas each business, school, government agency, healthcare provider, organization, and citizen shares the burden of mental health problems and has a responsibility to promote mental wellness and support prevention efforts, now therefore I, Martha O. Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2011 as Mental Health Awareness Month in Tompkins County, and call upon the citizens, government agencies, public and private institutions, businesses, and schools in Tompkins County, New York, to recommit our community to increasing awareness and understanding of mental health, the steps our citizens can take to protect their mental health, and the need for appropriate and accessible services for all people with mental health conditions. Thank you. You want to say something?
Yes. Thank you for all you do, and thank you for your support for this proclamation.
Thank you. And David Soil from the Office for the Aging for Older Americans Month in Tompkins County, which says that we can chew gum and walk at the same time. We have two different months, proclamations for the same month. Whereas Tompkins County is a community that includes over 15,000 citizens age 60 and older, and whereas the older adults in Tompkins County are the roots from which our community grows, bestowing gifts of wisdom and insight upon younger generations and strengthening the bonds between neighbors to create a better place to live, and whereas our society is enhanced by older adults aging peacefully in their communities, and whereas older adults in Tompkins County should be commended for their role in creating and maintaining the fiber of our community and nation, and whereas our community can provide recognition and respect to older adults and enrich the quality of their lives by increasing opportunities for seniors to remain in their communities as active and engaged citizens, providing services, technologies, and support systems that allow seniors to maintain connections within the community, and publicly recognizing the contributions of older adults to the diversity, strength, and unity of our community. Now, therefore, I, Martha O. Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2011 as Older Americans Month in Tompkins County, and urge every citizen to take time this month to honor our older adults and the professionals, family members, and volunteers who care for many of them. Our recognition and involvement of older Americans can enrich our entire community's way of life.
Thank you, David.
And on behalf of Lisa Holmes, the Director of the Office for the Aging, and especially the 15,000 older adults in Tompkins County, I want to thank you for this proclamation.
Thank you. Thank you. Time for The public to address us, I have Tobo Shibata and then Faye Gugakis. Our limit is 3 minutes, and Kathy will help you with keeping time.
Human abuse is tolerable to the extent to which it can hide its internal mechanism by confusing two critically different phenomena, which have exactly the same appearance, a delusional case and a real case of organized stalking victimization. Now, American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders states that low socioeconomic status may predispose an individual to the development of paranoid type of delusional disorder, and that major depressive episodes probably occurs in individuals with delusional disorder more frequently than in the general population. According to the Department of Justice's survey report titled Stalking Victimization in the United States, as with crime more generally, a pattern of decreasing risk for stalking victimization existed for persons residing in households with higher incomes. Neglecting the reality of social economic oppression, DSM does not instruct how to discern the profound ways in which the underworld violence to which those with low socioeconomic status are significantly more likely targeted than socioeconomically privileged psychiatrists constitute major depressive episodes. Instead, the concept of delusional disorder essentially allows psychiatrists and others to project their privileged reality and life history onto the interpretation diagnosis of the narrative of the oppressed. And two, to conclude that the narrative is simply unrealistic, delusional, and thereby constituting the psychiatrically discriminatory preconception of organized stalking victims. Organized stalking succeeds by manipulatively abusing the notion of psychiatric disability, whereby those with those who already have a history of depression are specifically targeted.
One more minute.
Okay. The psychiatrists ought to learn from their socioeconomically disadvantaged clients whose experiences and backgrounds critically differ from those of the privileged psychiatrists, instead of objectifying these clients with discriminatory preconception. The concept of delusional disorder systematically authorizes the underground prosecution by providing the self-deceivingly satisfactory avenue for the psychiatrist to exceedingly diagnose the material reality of invisible oppression, which is not easily and conveniently decipherable for the privileged psychiatrist as delusional. The director of Tompkins County Mental Health Clinic, a psychiatrist, thereby gave me a diagnosis of delusional disorder, which functions as a technology of psychiatric discrimination by foreclosing the Ithaca Police Department's criminal investigation, which may lead to the discovery of the covered evidences of the underworld organized crime.
Mr. Shibata, time is up.
Okay, just one. Okay, this psychiatric discrimination under the name of a psychiatric diagnosis practiced by the psychiatrist who is considered by today's law enforcement as the prejudge to the judge has been continuously exposing me to perpetual daily invisible organized physical assaults, including electromagnetic weapon assaults to this date.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Faye Gugakis.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is a topic that I brought to your attention a number of times, and due to the hydrofracking issue, it's been put on the table. But I'm here tonight to talk about it, and there's a couple of points that I will make again, and that is about cell phone and texting in our community while people are driving or people are on the bus. I believe that the state is still looking at, and hopefully they will do that, and I hope that you encourage our legislature to make the first offense for texting and cell phone use. We need that. People are doing it all the time, and when we talk about sustainability in this community, or in general sustainability, it is very hypocritical when we watch people not paying attention to the road. Second, there's a lot of cars that are now being manufactured with darker tinted windows, okay? You can't, I see so many cars where I can't see the driver. And even if you're not on a bicycle, you're still, even if you're a pedestrian, you need that communication with the driver. I mean, if you're going to enforce these rules on texting and cell phone use, you need to see what's going on. This is very, very serious. I've brought this to your attention before. I brought it to the Common Council. There is no discussion of this. I want a forum with the sheriff, with people from Cornell, Ithaca College, from the whole community, from the police department. We need to sit down and deal with these issues. The other issue that I've been wanting to talk about is cell phone use on the bus. Now, you're going to say, well, why are you coming here and not to TCAP? The reason I haven't gone to the TCAP board is because Hank DeLay is now, I think, head of it. Hank DeLay was instrumental and a key player in making the library not have I wanted the library to be cell phone free, except maybe for one room in the back, like other communities have that, okay? He was instrumental in defeating that, okay? So I feel very uncomfortable going before the board where I feel I'm not going to be listened to. It doesn't mean I won't do it, but I felt that I need to come here and say it at this point. And
one
that
minute.
Is, when we talk about getting on public transportation, which I use, I cannot deal with the amount of cell phone use on the bus. It is disturbing. It is disturbing to certain bus drivers, maybe not to all, but it's an issue, again, that we as a community are not dealing with it. We are not dealing with the wireless technology, which we have no idea of the electromagnetic radiation that we are being bombarded with. I am deeply concerned about that, and it's only getting worse. This is the community that should be asking those questions. We talk about hydrofire. We talk about a gazillion other sustainability issues and environmental issues. This is the environmental issue.
Okay? Wrap up, please.
The wireless technology is not only, I believe, harming us, okay, and there are studies out there that claim that, okay, it is also changing our cultural, our society.
Thank you, Faye.
Thank you.
All right, I see Dan Kogan out there from the city of Ithaca. Welcome.
Thank you. This is my first time for this body. I came just to give an update on what's happening in the city. I've made some notes. I don't know if there's anything in particular you're interested in. I wanted to update you on some of the recent things we've been working on. One of the biggest ones we've been busying ourselves with is what's been happening up in College Town, trying to change the zoning and the land use up there. As you probably know, this all came to a vote this month, and unfortunately, we were not able to generate the supermajority we needed in order to fully implement all of the changes that we sought to change. There was a 20% of the land that was owned was petitioned in to prevent the zoning from taking place. We were able to have seven out of 10 members voted in favor of changing the zoning and implementing what is going to be a form-based code, which would actually, instead of just dictating the area coverage and the setbacks on the land, it would actually start to dictate the aesthetics and what has to be there, and in order to try to keep the form of College Town consistent with what's there now. We want to try to prevent a wholesale change to the aspects of College Town that we like. Unfortunately, we only got 7 out of the 10 members of Common Council voting in favor of that, so we're not yet sure what's going to happen. We're still talking, and we'll probably have to make some decisions in the coming months about how we're going to proceed. It may just come to another vote. We may be able to get at least one of the 3 members who voted against it to change their mind. Another thing that we have been working on, which hasn't been in the news yet, but I'm sort of spearheading it, is maybe changing the laws governing livestock in the city. There's a number of residents in the city who are interested in sustainability issues and would like to be able to keep chickens. So I have offered to work with that group and see if we can't come up with some changes that would not be too controversial. and we're using some other municipalities' rules as a guide. Interestingly enough, there are quite a few other municipalities that do allow chickens. We're using Freeville's as one model, and actually New York City also allows chickens. So we're looking at that. That will come to the Planning Committee. We're also looking at smoking still, outdoor smoking. We implemented an outdoor smoking ban around the Commons. I know some of you aren't always so pleased with that, but I'm sure you'll get used to it. We still have a few issues on the west end of the Commons that we're looking at making some additional tweaks to the area that where smoking is not allowed. We're going to see if we can address some of those. And then finally, just our budget. I know you guys are all staring at a pretty bad budget for this coming year, as we are. We're trying something new this year in the city. Typically, the budget is put together by the mayor and the controller and comes to council in October. Because this year is going to be so difficult, we really want to try to get a jump start on it. So we've already had a couple of special meetings. In the city, we were kind of getting some background on some of the mandated services that we have to provide. Certainly, we need to know what we have to provide in order to know where we can cut. And we also had some discussions about some of the rules governing collective bargaining and if any staff reductions that may come, we may decide to make. So we're beginning that process. We're not looking forward to it. The deficit that we're facing, while I don't know that it's as great as yours, is certainly something that we are going to have to make some pretty difficult decisions in order to deal with. So that's what I have to look forward to in my final year on council. So I don't know if you guys typically ask questions of your municipal guests. I'm happy to take them if you do.
Thanks very much for coming, Dan. Yeah. Peter, and then Carol.
What triggered that supermajority requirement?
As I understand it, by state law, if the owners of at least 20% of the area in an area that is going to be rezoned protest, then you need a three-quarters majority. And we couldn't get half of a person to vote in favor, so we have to get a whole member of Common Council to vote in favor.
So some people might say, fortunately.
Some might say fortunately, but the interesting thing about that is that the change that got held up was the actual form-based code, and that's the one that really sort of protects College Town, because it lessens what can be built in a lot of the areas. We just had a fire up in College Town, most unfortunately, and that building was completely destroyed. Under current zoning, if the owners decide to rebuild, they can build a great big giant flat box that would be totally out of character with the rest of that block. And if the new zoning goes into effect, then anything that gets built there will actually have to be consistent with all the other buildings that are there. So we're hoping that people see the benefits of the new zoning.
Carol and Mike?
I have a question about road preservation efforts. One of the ways in which the county is coordinating or trying to coordinate with our municipalities, including the city, has been in our approach to putting in place procedures for potential higher industrial use of various kinds and commercial use of our roads and undue wear and tear that might be placed on those roads. Somebody from the city has been coming to some of those meetings. Can you tell us anything about the status of that? If there are any discussions about the city proceeding, some of our towns are talking about it, the county, it will probably come back in June.
I've heard about those discussions, and they sound really interesting and promising for addressing some of the potential negative effects of industrialization. It has not yet come to the committee level. I think that those are still probably taking place at the staff level or working group level. I think my sense is that there would be a lot of receptivity to that on the part of members of council, but it hasn't yet percolated up to the level of being discussed in the committee. I don't know. We're having a planning committee meeting even tomorrow, so it may actually come up. We may get an update on that
Yeah, we'd appreciate just keeping in touch about it, and the person who's been coming to those meetings has announced that she's leaving in, July.
Okay, so we'll have to get somebody to replace her.
The city might want to consider appointing somebody
great,
else.
Thanks.
Mike, and then Dooley.
Dan, I wondered if you could update us slightly on the city's redistricting efforts.
Yeah, well, we don't have much to report. We have also been seeking members to serve on our redistricting committee. We put out a call a few months back and didn't get a good response. I think the more recent call we put out, we actually got a much better response. So I think we will be forming that soon. The discussions have been that since the county and the city ideally are going to keep their districts somewhat in sync, that we would probably try to follow a similar timeline to what the county is doing. And so I guess I could turn the question around and find out and ask whether you guys have seated your members yet and whether that's ready to go.
Because we're close, but we haven't got there yet.
Okay. I think we would like to try to keep ours, as I said, synchronized with yours. It probably makes sense to have people who can at least come to both to find out what's being talked about. I think as much as possible, if we can keep the same number of legislative districts, county legislative districts and city wards in the city, so that we don't have a whole lot of splinter wards and the Board of Elections doesn't have to create, you know, extra districts. I think we're going to try to do that.
Thank you, Dooley. Then Will, then Frank.
I was going to ask about redistricting.
Okay, Will.
Dan, you mentioned the smoking.
Will your microphone?
I'm sorry. Thank you. You mentioned that the no smoking in the commons had been expanded, and I'm just wondering if that had if the folks that used to smoke there have gone elsewhere or. You know what the
people
is?
Who smoked where it used to be allowed?
Yes.
It seems that, you know, different things have happened. Certainly there's a crowd that used to congregate in the center of the commons, and they seem to have moved to the west end of the commons. There are other people who, you know, maybe just smoked ones and twos, and they seem to have found other places, you know, in the parking garages or near the parking garages perhaps. You know, the biggest complaints we're hearing are about people congregating on the West End, and some of the business owners there are having problems with smoke coming into their businesses and things like that. We're trying to look at ways of, you know, maybe moving the area a little further afield. That's going to be discussed in the Planning Committee this month. I don't know how much traction it'll get, you know, the choices before us are to do nothing, to retract, or to expand, I guess. So, you know, at this point, I don't think we're interested in retracting, and I know the business owners are not interested in us doing nothing. So,
second question. Last night there was a meeting having to do with proposals for redesign of Stewart Park or facilities within Stewart Park. What is going to be the decision-making process? Who will be deciding plan, does the city have money budgeted for this project, or does it all need to be raised?
I think the idea is that the money would be raised by like a Friends of Stewart Park organization. Certainly, there'll have to be coordination with the city, and the Board of Public Works will have to be involved. There's a Public Works facility there now, which is in the old Wharton Studio, and so one of the key pieces of the redesign is to build a new facility for the Public Works equipment. And I think the city's made it pretty clear that we don't have a lot of money to spare for this effort, so I think the Friends group that's forming is going to try to take care of all the needs and raise the funds.
Thank you.
Frank? Is Frank next? Thanks. Ready?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you. Just to follow up on the smoking question Will raised, are you taking comments on those three alternatives? Not tonight, of course, but we'll comment.
I mean, we will certainly be seeking a lot of public input, and we would be looking for suggestions as to whether to, you know, where to expand the band to, or where not, or maybe property owners are not interested in having a band in front of their business. I mean, I think what we want to do is we want to put out a proposal, and then we want to get public comment on it and to see what people think of it.
At some point, I'd like to talk to you about enforcement, Dan. The other question is, can you tell us a little more about the redevelopment of the commons, what the status of that is, and what?
Well, I don't know the most recent. I know that the city has money in the budget for doing detailed design and construction drawings this year. I don't know where things stand. We would have to be putting out a request for proposals to get people who are wanting to do that, and I don't know where that stands. I know that basically the idea is for the city to get to the point where we have a shovel-ready project, and then hope that somebody comes along with like a grant that is looking for a shovel-ready project, because certainly to do the full-on redesign would be pretty expensive, and we're not really in any position to do that right now. I think with the stimulus money is kind of, you know, drying up. That's not really looking so good. Would have been nice if we had something ready a couple of years ago, but one never knows. I think this is going to be a good project, and I think once there's some a detailed plan, it should be easier to try to identify sources of funding.
And Dan, I used your proxy at the TCAT Budget Committee meeting earlier this afternoon.
Thank you.
And committed the city to an increase in funding. I hope that was all right.
No, that's fine, yeah.
By the way,
that's for next budget year, right? I won't be on council anymore.
Yeah, well, but I'll still have your proxy. I noticed that with Faye here, you didn't indicate that you're a member of the TCAT Board of Directors.
What? I think she knows. She knows everything.
I have a question about the Board of Zoning Appeals and the Seneca Way apartments. Do you know?
I'm sure you didn't expect
to have, you know, to be grilled here, but
no, this is great. It
was okay. Well, it's really great to have you here. The BZA, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And they, I guess, the last meeting they postponed a vote. What's going on with that? Do you know?
For the Gateway apartments, is that
Seneca?
What you
meant? The ones where challenges.
Way. I don't know actually where that stands. I have not been paying as much attention to that as perhaps I should be.
Okay.
Can I say one? Dan, I know I tease you a lot.
Yeah,
I really do.
It's mutual.
I know. But you're a good respondent. You really, and you give it right back to you. I want to tell you, I'm going to miss you not only on the TCAT board, but on Common Council. You've been very decent to work with, and I wish you'd seek higher office. But that's a personal.
Thank you.
I think we'd all join in thanking you for your service to the city and the whole community, and the IDA for one thing for many years. So.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. Carol, something quickly?
Well, maybe. Back to the College Town zoning questions. Are there ways in which the county, its committees, could pass along any information that you don't already have about the ways in which nodal development there fits into the aims that we have outlined for development directions for development in the county, and are there things from us that would be helpful to the city as you go through that process, and particular people that you are interested in having?
Yeah,
I can't say.
I mean, there, like as I mentioned, there were three people who voted against the adoption. What would be useful for them? I can't say. I mean, it's worth if you wanted to. Reach out to any one of them and talk to them. I mean, that was Joel Zumoff, Maria Coles, and J.R. Claiborne.
Thank you. All right. Thanks again, Dan.
Yeah, thank you.
Great to see you here. Thanks. Legislators. Jim.
It occurred to me during the public session of comments that if there isn't a rule, there should be a rule that individuals' names are taken to task in the public session when they're not here to defend themselves, or random comments are made about a person and what they did or didn't do. Mm-hmm. And I think it should be clear, if you're going to be back there, that you don't go out after individual people in some sort of way. And if we don't have a rule to that effect, then I think we should have a rule.
Frank?
Thank you, Martha. I wanted to bring two things to your attention. Recently on WBNG, the Farm Bureau of Tompkins County received a really nice pat on the back. The farmers and people usually associated with agriculture donated, and they have been doing this for some time, but this is the first time they've gotten this recognition. They received a special recognition from the Food Bank of the Southern Tier, donating surplus food and also food that they sold for this particular purpose. They donated $1,000 to that food bank. And they're a very quiet organization most of the time, but it's nice to give some of our locals a pat on the back when they do something that's recognized. And it's a nationwide effort, so they receive some recognition not only in our region but nationwide. One announcement about TCAT. I know this is early, but just to tip you off, as chairman of the TCAT Budget Committee, I really wanted to alert you that we tend to have the budget presentation for the three entities that contribute, the county, the city, and Cornell. I know it's 2 months away, but you know how fast May has gone by. Be prepared for the July invitation, because that budget will be presented at the July meeting for TCAT. Thank you. Thanks, Martha.
Anyone else? Carol?
Yeah, I just want to keep you informed about what's going on with the TCOG Assessment and Land Valuation Subcommittee. We are getting great play these days. You may see it in the press in the next few days. We weren't quite ready for that, but it seems to be coming. I'm traveling to Albany tomorrow with a contingent from that committee to talk about the issues I've brought here already, about the ways in which we're concerned about keeping our assessment rolls fair as valuations go up or down related to gas drilling, and concerns that we have about the impact on the residential mortgage market and the ability for that to continue in upstate New York. And it obviously is of interest, because we've gotten meetings for tomorrow not only with those who've already heard gas drilling concerns, but those who have paid no attention to date. The Deputy Secretary for Policy and Programs is paying attention, the Governor's Assistant Secretary for Economic Development, in addition to some of our own legislators on Senate and Assembly sides, the chairs of the Senate and Assembly committees that are responsible for housing, economic development, finance. And some of our members have been out there talking to Sunny May, whose ability to continue to make mortgages and may be impacted. So this is a whole other area, and it's starting to get some press. So watch for more. If you have questions, I'm happy to talk further about that.
Nathan?
Hello, everybody. About 2 weeks ago this time, I was in the White House actually listening to President Obama talk at this moment around 6 o'clock and for a White House county officials meeting. And you could actually read about that in the NACO news. I'm in there's probably like, what, 12 pictures, and I'm probably in like 9 of them, mainly because I was this random guy from Tompkins County that kept on asking questions. And it was funny, actually. So I found out how I got invited. It was actually the National Association of Counties organized it, and it was their executive board and their healthcare committee. And then me, but I got in through a totally different channel into the meeting, mainly through my connection with the Young Elected Officials Network. So everybody in the room knew each other, and they were like, and they thought, wow, who's this random guy from Tompkins County? It was pretty funny. And so I probably annoyed them with a number of questions that I asked. But It was a very good day. The day started out with a discussion about poverty and alternatives to incarceration. It's actually a very big issue with the administration. And in fact, they have, what's his name, Ron Sims, I believe, who was the King County executive, who pioneered a lot of alternative to incarceration programs in Seattle. And he's now actually part of the administration, and this is one of the big things he works on in housing and urban development, but he takes that angle with it. So he's great. So he presented a bunch of stuff that King County is doing, and then also talked about how the administration is putting together a bill, I believe it's called like the Second Chances Act or something to that extent, which basically will provide more funding and grant opportunities for alternative to incarceration programs, which counties could take advantage of. So that was great. Next, we had we heard from EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson, Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood, and the HUD Secretary, I think his name is Sean Donovan, I want to say. And they talked about how they're going to create more grant opportunities to improve infrastructure and also promote bike paths, walkability, walkable cities, et cetera. I did want to ask them about hydrofracking, and I actually offered one other county legislator, I told them I would buy them food after this if they let me cut in line, and they did, and then they stopped it like right before me. So I didn't have a chance to ask the EPA administrator about fracking. However, the Deputy Director of Intergovernmental Affairs, David Agnew, said that he would deliver a question about fracking directly to the EPA administrator. So since then, Martha helped me put together a question about it. Carol, I also helped. Mostly Martha, okay. But I said to Carol and Martha, asking for some help on that question, and then submitted it to them. I have not received a response, but as soon as I receive a response, I will share it with everybody here. Then the final, we also heard from Secretary of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, who talked about their commitment to emergency management and how through the tornado incidences, through the Deepwater Horizon disaster, that they've kind of re-looked at emergency operations and really have learned to trust the local governments when it came to response to these major disasters. And so they're going to do more to fund, they're looking at more programs to help fund emergency operations centers in different municipalities. Then we heard from Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, who was only able to talk for about 3 minutes before the Vice President came, and so she got cut off. and the Vice President came, and he talked about the President's campaign to win the future and how infrastructure development is big and how counties are the key to that. That was very good. Then at the very end of the meeting, the day, we had a discussion about healthcare reform and implementation. And we heard from two individuals. I forgot the first woman's name. She's the deputy assistant to the president when it comes to health policy. And she talked about healthcare reform to date and all the things that have happened. And then we also heard from Cindy Mann, who is the Medicaid. She's the associate director of CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, but she's specifically the administrator for Medicaid. And she actually started her career in Onondaga and Tompkins counties. Which is very, very cool. And I need to find her maiden name, I think, so we can look up and see where she worked when she was here. So we had a very long discussion about Medicaid and how she believes that many of the reforms actually will reduce Medicaid costs for the counties. Not very many details exactly related to that, but they actually said that a lot more is coming in the next year or two as it relates to Medicaid. The day concluded with a surprise visit from the president. The president, actually, it was funny. The head of intergovernmental affairs, she was just sitting on a table like this, and she goes, and everybody's packing their bags, and she says, "Well, before you leave, I'd like to introduce the man who needs no introduction." And we go, "What? What?" And suddenly the president walked into the room, which was very shocking. So we all quickly got back to our seats after we, of course, applauded. And the president talked about a number of different things. He talked about the administration's commitment to fighting the idea of Medicaid block grants, which, you know, as you saw from the recent Ithaca Journal article, would really hurt New York State in terms of Medicaid funding. He also talked about how he's, opposed to the Ryan Plan, mainly because the Ryan Plan shifts all Medicaid costs to the states. And, of course, to us, what does that mean? It means a lot of cost shift to the local governments. And so the president said that he recognized that and would do all that he can to oppose that plan. And then he also talked about how that a lot of people say that he's a big government guy, but he said that he has actually too much government to worry about already, so he likes it when local governments, like counties, run programs, and he wants to do more things to empower local governments. So overall, it was a great day, and came away with a lot of information, and hopefully I'll get a response soon from the EPA Administrator, Lisa Jackson, about fracking, and that's it. So thank you.
Thank you, David. Thank you for that report. I actually, in my last communication to Kevin McCabe, our governor's regional representative, I pointed out that the president has been talking to county officials more than the governor has. So
wow.
That's not an exaggeration.
Yeah. It was an amazing meeting, I mean, to hear the president talk about that. By the way, there was other New York representatives. Nassau County Executive was there, Monroe County Executive, and Suffolk County Executive.
Thanks, Nathan. Mike.
Well, the governor hasn't been spending time lately talking about an independent redistricting commission, which I wish he would be, leaving it to others. I'm just so afraid that we're going to face another 10 years with the gerrymandered districts like we have now that are an abomination. A couple of nice things I just want to report from my district, and that is the Dairy Day will be coming up on the 11th of June. And the dedication of the Lincoln Center of the Southworth Library will happen on the 18th of June. And we hope you all come out for those.
Thank you, Mike. And it's looking great. I was in the village the other day. Anyone else? Leslie, I'm sorry.
Nathan, however you got in there, we're glad that you were there. And thank you for that great report. That was just amazing. I have just a couple of feel-good things. One, I do want to say that if you missed it, this past Sunday was the Dorothy Cotton Jubilee Singers performance at Ithaca College, and our very own Deputy County Administrator Paula Younger was a soloist.
Whoa.
So you have to hear her sing. She does her thing. She does.
So one of these, right now?
If we have a yeah, she should sing right now.
Yeah, I think so.
I say thank you for being at the White House. I say she should sing. If you don't know about the Dorothy Cotton Jubilee Singers, I just want to read a little bit. The Dorothy Cotton Jubilee Singers are a group of community singers dedicated to the preservation of the Negro spiritual, which is very, very important. The group is named in honor of civil rights pioneer Dorothy Cotton, a resident of Ithaca, New York, who served as education director for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference under Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., and continues to spread her message of freedom and hope to people around the world through music. If you know Dorothy, you know nothing she does goes without singing involved. She loves to sing and does a fabulous job, and it's always some old Negro spiritual or civil rights song that just gets you moving and reminds you how passionate you are about this work and about social justice work. So thank you, Paula, for representing, and make sure we know about it beforehand, so we'll all be there in the cheering section. I also want to remind people that on June 9th, this was going to be part of my WDIC report, but I figure by then I'll lose my voice, is the Diversity Roundtable. And if you have not signed up yet, no, I shouldn't say that. I know you all have signed up already to participate in it. So please be there. It seems, just from looking at the workshops that are being offered, a great group of workshops, great presenters, an amazing local guest speaker, Dr. Sean Eversley Bradwell. So please, June 9th, I'll be there. WDIC and the county, of course, will be represented at the Diversity Roundtable. It will be at Emerson Suites, Ithaca College, because it's just getting too big for any place else. So I think it starts at 9. Steve helped me out here, and goes until 4. Yeah. So a great event. So please do sign up. And there was one other thing I was going to mention.
Jack, MRC.
Thank you. On Wednesday, the 25th, is the joint annual meeting of the Greater Ithaca Activity Center and the Multicultural Resource Center. I mention this as we look at budgets, as we look at doing things together. This has been a really great example of how people can get together and present what they're doing, how they can share resources. So instead of two agencies spending money and doing all of this to put on separate annual meetings, they do it jointly and present to this community really great work. The, again, Dorothy Cotton, the Dorothy Cotton Institute Fellowship members, founding members, will be presenting at the meeting. It will be held at GIAC in the gymnasium beginning at 5:30. And last but not least, I was number 685 at the polls just before I got here today. People, if you're at home and you're watching us, take a minute. Please go out and vote. It's a school board election. I know it's not as pressing for a lot of people because it hasn't been a very controversial budget year. Usually when it is, people are out in numbers. But we really need people to vote. Candidates, budgets are up. So please get out and vote. Our children's education and all our future depends on it. So please do go vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslyn, and I hope it feels better. I hope it feels better than it sounds.
It does.
Okay, Nathan.
Yeah. To add to the GIAC MRC meeting, we at the last board meeting, JR and I worked on. We're tasked with putting together a postcard for people to sign to ask the governor and the state legislature to reconsider extending the tax surcharge on millionaires because we know it affects so many local community programs. And so the board has decided to take that position and do education and awareness around that at that meeting as well.
Great. Thank you very much. Anyone else? We don't have a special presentation, so I'll go into my report about the school board votes. I know Ithaca is open till 9. I don't know if all the districts are open till 9 o'clock tonight. And turnout is often very low, so just a couple of votes really can make a difference.
Sure can.
So really encourage people to vote. Frank, you mentioned the TCAT budget meeting. The TC3 budget meeting is this Friday at 11:45, gathering in the forum at TC3. That's our joint meeting with legislators from Cortland County. Real important if you can make it, and I'm sure a few of us will be driving from downtown here if anybody wants a carpool.
What time is it again?
Well, sort of gathering there at 11:45 so you can get your lunch and then sit down at noon for the for Carl Haynes' presentation. On your desks is a one-page document that Joe and I have been working on, and actually I'm not sure the title of it. It's about the local mortgage thresholds for local taxes, sales tax, mortgage recording, cell phone surcharges, what you had, Carol. We've been putting this together. We've sent it off to NYSAC. Our pitch is we really hope we would really like the state to adopt these sort of permanent thresholds for these locally determined taxes that right now we go hat in hand to the state for approval on, and we to get them off of the to get all of us off of this business that it takes up a whole lot of time, a whole lot of staff time. They don't like voting on raising taxes. If they would just vote these thresholds permanently, then they're out of that business. We all save time, and those are local decisions that we're willing to take responsibility for. I just wanted to give you the one pager that we've developed. We're trying to get NYSAC to be interested in forwarding this, and we may take it to Tom O'Mara and Barbara Lifton to see if they'd be willing to develop legislation on this. We've talked a lot about our own local mortgage recording tax. That's just one of these, and I think it may have a little more punch if we broaden it to include these other areas, and therefore more counties would be involved. We had a good meeting with Tom DiNapoli, Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, last Friday. Thanks to Irene Stein, who organized it. He was in town to visit Advion Biosciences. among other things. And we had a number of us were with him, Joe and Michael Stam from TCAD as well. Joe's pitch was about trying to get a third-year projection, even if it's kind of a very tentative projection on pension costs, that would be helpful. Michael Stam was interested in the report that he'd made, report he'd issued in legislation that the controller drafted about the local development corporations. Initially, we were a little concerned that that was just another way to attack local government and the one tool that we still have left. But apparently, really, the legislation is aimed at LDCs, not like ours, but LDCs that have been abusing the power and that they have. So we had a good conversation about that. And I want to thank all of you who attended along with us. And Leslie, you had mentioned the Freedom Riders documentary a couple weeks ago. You had a preview, right? It was last night on PBS, and I hope we can. It'll show up again, or it'll be online or something. It was incredible. And to think that all that stuff really happened 50 years ago this week was just unbelievable. I mean, just the idea that that level of hatred and violence was only 50 years ago was just shocking and reminded me of my childhood in Baltimore, where we had colored and white swimming pools and water fountains, and you know, in 1963 my mom went to Selma, and we made sure, she said, if anybody asks you where I am, you tell them I went to visit my mother, and we weren't allowed to tell anybody where she went. You know, we picketed the local swimming pool because it was segregated, and you know, it's just, you know, I'm not that old, you know, and that's part of my upbringing, and it's just, It's something that you should take time to try to see next time it shows up, or if it might be online. So thanks for mentioning it when you first saw it, Leslie, and it's really worth your time to see it. So that's my report. Brian?
Folks, thanks for doing this home rule. To me, it's really helpful. I can go on record as saying I think all of these home rule things as it relates to the state and having to go and get permission from them every time you want to enact something like that, to me it's always seemed kind of silly. And it would be great if this sort of legislation would go through wholly and allow us to make these sorts of decisions. They certainly don't ask us when they do something. So, but yeah, that's another argument. My question is, Joe, have you done any calculation if we were to go to the thresholds, if we're not already there, for all of these things? Do you have any idea what the aggregate would be?
No, Brian. I haven't done that. In the mortgage tax, we are currently at zero. Our proposal right now is to go to 0.25%. This threshold has it at 0.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So I know in that case it would be $1.8 million.
Yeah, it was 900
for the county, right. D-transfer, we're at threshold. Landline, we're at threshold. Wireless, all counties are capped at 30 cents per month per phone. The state is at $1.20 per phone. So that's one where I really don't have any information to tell you how much that would mean, but it would certainly be significant and growing more so every month as more people get off landlines and onto cell phones.
And lastly, we had a bit of this discussion at budget, but the sales tax, if we were not allowed to extend our own sales tax, that has a major consequence for us.
Yeah, that's. I don't know what chapter you file in the public sector, but that is a catastrophic loss if that were to happen.
Yeah, and I have. We sent a message also that the main issue for us is the principle of this, and if there's negotiation about what those thresholds should be, then let's have that conversation. But the main idea is take that policy position.
But we would have a lot of help on that because a lot of these folks are already at these thresholds.
It's an excellent point, Brian. If you look at this sheet, 45 counties out of 57 counties outside New York City are already at or above 4%. Mm-hmm. So almost all of us would be crippled by that kind of a failure to extend that that extra sales tax.
Sure. I mean, let's put it out there. We're talking about millions.
Yeah.
How much is it if we lose one eye?
Not for us. $9 to $9.5 million plus the
1%.
1%.
Yeah.
Right. Plus the municipalities. It hurts every municipality.
Right. Everybody loses.
Which, Leslie, I know you're next. If somebody, Jim or Nathan, if you have copies of that to give to the media in the back, and we'll get new copies for you. So it'll be good to have. Good to have some attention on that. And Carol's got 10 copies of that plus the mortgage recording tax to take to Albany tomorrow to drop off with everybody she talks to. Leslie?
Frank.
Okay, Frank?
Martha, on the same topic, is there any more to this proposal than this one page? I mean, is there any other detail that we should be aware of before this is sent off to Albany as a request?
No, we sent, there were a couple of emails, you know, just basically asking NYSAC to look at this as something to take when they, as they lobby with the governor's office, et cetera.
Thank you.
Yeah. Leslie?
So I'm trying to understand what I'm reading here. Mm-hmm. I got the currently where we are. The proposed is coming from where?
Yeah, I'll go through it. Currently under state law, counties are allowed to have a sales tax only of 3% or less.
No, I understand all of it.
Yep.
Where is the proposed for all of those coming from? Where did those numbers, like propose, establish a threshold of 4%? Where did that come from?
4 is basically the current norm, so it's based on that. So we're almost all at 4 right now anyway. So that's, instead of having us all go back for something that we already have, that's where that came from, the 4%.
So you and Martha decided that that's what you're proposing?
Yes.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
And so I'm sorry, Leslie. This also, on the sales tax, I believe this also parallels where NYSAC is on this issue. They're also advocating for a higher threshold for the sales tax, and I believe we're at the same place as they are.
So I'll tell you where I am. I appreciate something you said a minute ago, Martha, which was that we want to save the state essentially. Let us do this instead of always having to come to you. And if we want to discuss or argue or whatever it is, negotiate the thresholds, we can do that. But don't, you know, at least give us the authority to do this. What I'm not comfortable with is the proposed numbers, what's being proposed, especially since I'm not sure that I had any part in discussing what it will be, except for the mortgage recording tax. So I'm not necessarily comfortable with saying, yeah, I want to send this along with this proposal as something I'm agreeing to.
I hear you. And I mean, maybe this is something that really should go through the budget committee. And this is basically in the conversations that we've had with NYSAC. We've informally been addressing, you know, talking about these permanent specials. And basically, I think, I don't have it in front of me, but I think all of them, with the exception of the cell phone surcharge, all of them are basically the sort of proposed threshold is where they currently, a lot of counties currently have permission to go. And this would just be to allow all the rest of us to have that same permission and make it permanent. So it's kind of not inventing something new. It's basically just taking the idea of making it a blanket issue for everybody.
Can I?
Yeah.
So I understand that. This doesn't say to me allowing us the permission to go up to 4, saying establishing this as the threshold.
Right.
Saying establishing this as the threshold, which is not something I agree to. I don't mind having the permission to be able to go to that level, and then we can talk amongst ourselves of where we want to go. But I'm not. So maybe I'm just reading this wrong.
Okay. This is not give us the ability right now to do it. This would allow us to make that decision. Then if we decide, you know, Joe puts his budget together and he decides he wants to increase whatever, then he brings it to us, we debate it, we have a public hearing. It's a local decision. This is not saying that this is where we would be.
Thank you. So there'll be some language in here that says that counties to get permission to raise to this wherever we want to go.
It
we
just
have
means
the authority
if,
and we're able to do this.
Right. It just means if we decide we want to do this, up to that threshold, we don't have to ask the state for permission.
Got it.
Okay. It doesn't mean that we are proposing that we do it. Do you make do you understand?
I, what you're saying.
What?
I got what you're saying.
Okay.
That's not how I was reading this when I read it, so I appreciate that explanation.
Does that help? Okay. I had Peter, Mike, Jim.
Well, I'm looking at the piece of paper, and I haven't thought about it before because it's in front of me, but I think the way you're describing it is not actually completely correct, that the de-transfer tax... Currently, five counties have it. I mean, there are 63 counties in New York, 62, I forget which. So that doesn't mean that that's a common tax. And on the other one, on landline telephone surcharge, it's two counties that have it. So it's not fair to say that this is a common level of tax throughout the state. I don't quite know how to put this, but the state is now saying in its wisdom it wants to keep us from raising taxes by putting on a tax cap. And we've said to them, no, we don't want you to do that, but what we want you to do instead is to give us the authority to raise taxes by ourselves. That's fine, you can ask, but I can't imagine that the answer would be yes in an environment when they say they're committed to imposing limits on local taxes. So, just a comment.
Yeah, I don't know how hopeful I am. But
huh?
I don't know how hopeful I am. The point about the two counties or five counties, I'm trying to... They have, in the past, given permission for those two or those five counties to raise those levels to whatever it is there. So, with the exception of the cell phone... We're not asking for anything beyond what they have already done. And if they've done it for those two counties, why not the rest of us, and why go hat in hand every time? Yeah, Peter?
Well, there is an obvious answer. I know nothing about this whatsoever, but there is an obvious answer, namely that the legislature felt that they should only do this in special circumstances for certain counties that have particular problems one way or the other, or problems with telephone, the cost of landlines, or something like that. So I don't know if that's the case or whether this is just arbitrary. Whoever asks, they say yes. If that's the case, then the whole thing is silly, okay?
In the past, it has...
If the case is that they reserve this source of income for counties that have particular reasons for asking for it, then it doesn't particularly make any sense to raising it. So I'm just saying before, I would endorse this. I want to understand it a little bit better about why it is that that is something that the legislature has reserved for itself to decide.
Well, my understanding is, in the before 2 years ago, if your local assembly person and senator carried the bill, they would approve them. They really did. It was boilerplate. You asked and you received. They always did it at the end of session, and my belief is, and I have been told this, they did it at the end of session so they could hold those so that the leaders could hold those legislators in line. That if you don't vote with us on this big bill, we're not going to support your local revenue bill. So that has nothing to do with good policy. It has nothing to do with whether the local county had a legitimate reason for asking for the tax. And as Joe has said many times, we've, on the sales tax, on the mortgage recording tax, we've vetted that proposal. We've talked about it many times. We had a public hearing. We've had another public hearing. That's a local conversation that we've had, and the answer has been we want this ability to raise this tax. So it really is about the principle about get out of our way on these little things that They don't like the political onus of having to vote to increase your taxes. So we'll say, we'll get you out of that problem, and we'll all save time for the taxpayers because our staff won't have to spend time sending things back and forth, and their staff won't have to, you know, all that Mickey Mouse that we do back and forth. Mike, and then I think Carol.
I sort of
Jim,
agree.
Jim, then Carol.
I agree with the comments Leslin made, and you started to make. I think if we're going to make a proposal, even to NYSEC, to ask that it be carried for us as a proposal by Tompkins County, it needs to go through a committee and then get voted on by this legislature, because that's how we do things.
Okay. Jim?
I would agree with that. I think the reading of the sales tax one, for example, is nothing more than asking for the 1% that we have to ask for every 2 years.
Right.
And that makes perfect sense to me. And the others, I think, given the discussion at the committee level, would be more clear. It isn't like we're attempting to override everything that's there. In fact, we're not trying to do that at all. My sense is we're trying to get the opportunity to make these decisions at the local level and not have to go hat in hand to people who are playing games to get other votes so we can get our vote. And, you know, it makes no sense to me. But I do believe that maybe we should have a discussion about it at the committee level.
Happy to do that. Let me just say, this is just to get the conversation started, because they've got 15 more days of legislation left to do all the people's business, and we just want to get something in NYSAC's hands. Carol, and then David.
Yeah, well, I was going to make suggestions about how just the labeling of the document and an explanation on it could be tweaked before it went, but if it's going to go through committee, that may not.
Well, we are.
Particularly the proposal by Tompkins County that's at the bottom. So, that if it's going to be sent out, I think I'm hearing that it has to at least be labeled that this was draft for discussion or whatever.
So it's just to try to get this discussion started. Dave?
Yeah, I'm just trying to clarify a couple things for myself. We already have the 4% sales tax. We already have the 30 cents at the bottom on the surcharge. All the rest represent increases?
No, we have the transfer tax. The sales tax we won't have if they don't.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's just not more than we're getting
currently. Right. I think the only one is, and we have the landline charge. Do we have a dollar or 30 cents on landlines?
With the dollar on landlines, and we also have the D transfer tax. We also have that. So that's existing revenue.
Okay.
So I'm happy to really have a discussion of this in budget. If we can move on, unless there's something, Pam.
I just had a quick question. So this hasn't been sent yet?
It's been sent to NYSEC. I mean, just can we get you guys to pay attention to this? Can we get you guys to carry this idea? We've been talking about it for months with them, and we just wanted to put something on paper. Here's what we mean. Permanent thresholds, that's the point.
Right, it's just, my question more is directed to the fact that it's already done. I mean, this has already been sent. Taking it to a committee doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, we certainly can have a discussion about it, but in terms of this piece of paper, it's already happened, right?
I mean, it's an internal document that went to Steve Aquario. I think if we want it, it'd be great to have a legislative resolution that says, here's, whereas all these things, this is what we would like to see the state do as a policy. But that comes, let's do that at the next budget meeting.
Yeah.
Jim, and then Will.
I think that what it should be sent to NYSEC, because it's plain and simple, and they need this kind of, any more complicated, people don't look at it. I mean, it's clear to me they don't look at it. I think if we have a discussion and we want to put a resolution together to send to the legislature, that would make ultimate sense also. Let me just say one other thing. We've heard that the governor is going around the state campaigning for his 2% tax cap. No mandate relief, no nothing, just 2%. I spent 5 days in New York, and And I listened to the local news, and I saw the Speaker of the Assembly on the local news. And I don't know if it comes up here. I didn't really, it was not in the journal. But someone asked him about his plan. And his plan was, we will have something coming with a 2% or with a tax cap, but it's going to have other things involved. And it sounded like he was talking of carve-out, because there was also an article that went along with it. E.J. McMahon, a favorite of some people around the table, talking about the pension. And it was kind of information that I don't think made it here, but locally in New York, people were really kind of lit up by what he was talking about. And someone said to him, does it have anything to do with rent control? He said, it's all related. You know how he looks like he's, passing his hands over a big stone, and it's crazy that, that's the way the game is being played, and those of us out in the woods are just, waiting to see what people are going to do. So whatever we can do to inform these people can't hurt us at all, and we need to do it.
Yeah. Again, this doesn't commit us to actually raising any of these local taxes that we don't already have. Will?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I want to thank you and Joe for getting this together, and I'm sorry that we've had to spend so much time sort of clarifying what it means, but I think it's pretty clear to me, and the implications are huge. So thank you very much for doing that. Okay.
Thank you, Will. Anything else? All right, County Administrator Joe Mariano.
I have a very short report tonight. It took a lot of time at your last meeting, so I'll go short tonight. Just a quick reminder, the 25-year dinner is this week, 19th, beginning at 5 o'clock, so if any of you would like to attend that event, it is on the 19th, so Frank, the Health and Human Services Committee, needs to finish on time so we can all join our guests who have 25 years of service with the county and deserve a pat on the back.
No pressure there, right?
None at all. I also wanted to let you know that on the 23rd of May, Ed Marks and I are going to be going to Geneva to talk to 12 counties in the Finger Lakes area about a Finger Lakes regional sustainability plan that Ed Marks conceived many months ago. And we have kind of been in a conversation with 12 other counties in this region, floating ideas in front of them. The goal, I think most of you have seen this, is really to promote the revitalization of the rural economy through sustainable practices. It has piqued the interest of these other counties to the point where they're willing to attend this event at the Finger Lakes Institute in Geneva on the 23rd. It looks like all 12 counties will be represented. They will have planning folks there as well as some county administrators or their representatives. So I look forward to reporting back to you after that meeting on whatever progress we achieve there. So again, that's the 23rd. I think that's my report.
And you're taking the Prius.
Of course we're taking the Prius. Right.
Thank you. Any questions for Joe? Thank you, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
So I wrote a litigation update, and I got here like 15 minutes early to make sure I distributed it, and then I forgot. So I will give it to Kathy to leave in your boxes, and I have no further report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director David Squires.
The opportunity to give you two pieces of good news. The sales tax distribution for April came in over 11%, so we're back on track on budget. We'll net out because last month we dropped back and we recovered fully through the April distribution. Another good news is just before we started the meeting tonight, the chair, who's chair of the IDA, signed some checks for a unique circumstance that I can't ever recall happening, where a business voluntarily paid the IDA back for tax benefits that it received under an IDA pilot agreement. This was Emerson Power Transmission that relocated. They consolidated their operations in Kentucky and St. Louis, and they repaid the IDA over $360,000 which represented the benefits that had accrued to that were granted to in the taxing jurisdiction. So the school district is going to get a check for over $120,000. Tompkins County will get a check for $47,000 for the property tax benefit they got, and $8,000 on sales tax. And so, I mean, and this is, I've never heard of, without litigation, receiving this kind of money back. So Emerson is truly a wonderful corporate citizen, and it's too bad they had to move.
Just to clarify, it wasn't quite voluntary. I mean, the IDA took steps, and you know, but they didn't. No, we didn't have to take them to court.
Right. The fact that they didn't challenge it was really amazing. Just a little. We're wrapping up our annual report, county finances. In the state comptroller was here last week, you know, and everybody talks about pension, and New York State pension is fully funded. Which brings me to the point, in our financial statements, we have notes to financial statements which talk about post-employment benefits. The pension benefit the county participates in is a fully funded benefit. We anticipate paying $6.8 million in 2011 to fully fund that benefit for its current employees. Also in our financial statements, we reflect the cost of a benefit that we don't fully fund, and that's the post-employment health insurance. As a point of comparison, our actuarial evaluation of the health insurance benefit, if we were going to fund it like a pension and fully fund it, in addition to the $8 million in premiums we paid on behalf of our employees and retirees for the current 2010 year, we would have paid additional $9 million to fully fund that benefit for the expected lifetime of the employees when they retire. And this is one of the reasons why health insurance is such a big issue, that the accrued liability for these benefits of our current employees is now $90 million. It's we've had this system for the last 3 years, and it's like $20 million we've underfunded the benefit, because we only pay as we go, which is different than the retirement benefit, which we pay as we go, plus we fund the future liability. But if you look at that cost, it's fairly comparable. We're paying it's a little more. And that's why everybody else is backed away from providing lifetime benefits for employees, because it's unsustainable. And fortunately, we don't have to fund the health insurance benefit like we have to fund the retirement benefit. But just think about additional $9 million having to contribute in 2011. It's kind of quite remarkable.
Pat?
Does the fact that the pension system is fully funded, is that going to impact our future payments into the system?
No, it's not required. But if you had the national government accounting standard board that oversees accounting regulations, they would recommend that you should fund it just like you fund your pension benefit. And no government can afford to do that. I mean, we have a relatively low, we have an accrued liability of $90 million for health benefits for our current employees. But that's low compared to school districts because they don't require a large amount of co-pays by the employees.
Peter?
But of course, there's. I don't quite understand this, but we're fully funded on the pension fund because we have a full obligation to pay it.
right? But that's not the same thing with the post with the retired people's insurance. Is that an obligation that we have to pay that, or is that something that we simply decide year after year? Because if it's within our power to not pay it, then there's no good reason why it should be fully funded.
Well, it's a current commitment that's not guaranteed, but it's been the policy to provide the benefit. Corporate America has treated post-employment benefits like 401k plans, where while they're an active employee, the corporation contributes. The minute you retire, they're through with you.
Right.
We are not.
But nonetheless, it is different than the pension in that we can change our mind. I mean,
there's no
telling what's going to happen
right.
with health care.
Yes.
They may, you know, the government may pay it all or something like that. So it's not really the same kind of obligation that.
But it's one of those issues that they're hammering governments in the press in the financial markets because, you know, of this ticking time bomb, and you see these headlines. Well, they're ultimately going to file bankruptcy to get out of this obligation, which is the record. You know, historically, that's not a very.
But that, I mean, it is true. I understand that New York is in a very different financial situation with regard to the cost of future benefits than say the retirement benefits than say is Illinois and a bunch of other states.
New York's one of three that are fully funded in America.
Right.
Brian.
Just a quick question. It might not necessarily be for you, Dave, but that's great news as far as Emerson's concerned. My question is, have they made a commitment to pay property taxes until they dispose of the property? I know it's a toxic site up there. What's going on with the cleanup? And that would be that is a very valuable, if it's buildable, very valuable piece of property.
We haven't had any instances of default in taxes.
It's fully back on the tax rolls right now.
I think I read somewhere they have 10 years to even start the environmental cleanup of the property. Is that?
My understanding is that they have. They are also are committed long term to taking care of that. Maybe Pam, you know more.
I think it depends on what you mean. I think that they are. Have had some commitment to mitigating houses that they have found the TCE in. In terms of a real cleanup, I don't think anybody's there's no funds that, there's been no commitment to clean up there's just the potential for a huge mess up there. And I don't think there's been any commitment on their part. It's also, Borg Warner, this goes back to Borg Warner. Warner was actually the company that really created the pollution. But anyway, I don't think there's any substantial cleanup on the horizon, would be my guess.
But I would like them to clean up that site and then donate that land to us. It's a really, really nice property.
So we put our offices up there?
How about the jail?
Jail. And one other point I wanted to make up, there's two bond resolutions on the agenda tonight, and remind you that bond resolutions require 10 votes, and since you have only 13 present tonight, I'm hoping that that's not going to be an issue.
13? I think there are 14 of us. Right. Nobody leaves until we vote on that. Is that what you're saying? That's the plan. All right, thank you very much, David. We have an item that we don't usually get to, but report from other county staff as recognized by the chair. I'd like to invite Steve Essies from Personnel to come on up. And as we informed you before, that he sent you a message and then put in your box over here in the mailbox is the documents relating to the evaluation of our four direct report staff personnel. This is not an executive session matter because Steve's going to talk about the process and how we go through the documents. We're obviously not going to be talking about the individual performances at this point, but we wanted to give Stephen a time to help us work through the documents. So Thank you very much for your help on this important process.
Sure. Thank you, Martha. Good evening, and I just wanted to ask, first of all, if everyone has a package here, because we're going to talk about some of the information in there.
The ones that are not, there are still some on top of the box.
Are there any more on the box, though?
I do.
Kathy, will you want to check this? Are there any more up there?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Well, you can use this. I'd just like to point out the obvious that direct reports make a substantial contribution toward achieving the mission and vision of this organization. And with your packets, I did include the mission and vision statements that the legislature adopted several years ago. Now, the purpose of the performance management tool is to help the legislature and the direct reports to strategically align the activities of the direct report with the mission and vision of the legislature, part of our strategic initiative. The performance review system should enable you to collectively evaluate and measure the success of previous initiatives, which you will see in that packet, as well as to plan for future outcomes. You'll use it to identify and reinforce specific positive behaviors or discourage other behaviors. Performance review cycle requires that you provide ongoing coaching, counseling, and continuous feedback, so hopefully you are doing that through committees and things like that with your direct reports. And at least once per year, you should review and appraise the direct report's performance and ultimately recognize the positive performance in some tangible way. And that might be a component that's missing, and I don't know how we'll address that, but I'll leave that up to you. This performance review model was developed by Polly Younger, and she did an excellent job. I did a little bit of research into how she put it together. It's really a combination of three different best practices in HR as far as performance review models. You have the graphic scale model, management by objectives model, and you have considerable stakeholder narrative or feedback folded in there as well. What you're going to find is the graphic scale model is that 1 through 5, with 1 being the least desirable trait, 5 being the most desirable trait, with 3 being an average score. You're going to find that's valuable in a large group setting like this in that I can combine the group scores and give you an average score for these different graphic points. And you'll see that as we flip through the packet in a minute. The management by objectives is a strategic model that assumes that you will have a personal dialogue with each of these 4 direct reports and that they will assist you in identifying priorities and goals that are clearly defined and measurable and in alignment with your goals and objectives. The stakeholder narrative piece is, it does provide some aspects of a 360-degree review process, but in this case, it's not a true 360 as occasionally, or in this case, the direct reports have been enabled to select their own stakeholders for feedback, both internal and external. That could change. That's, again, something you'd have to discuss. But again, I think Paula did a really good job of putting that together. Jackie Thomas and I in the personnel department have been working with the database to gather in some of this feedback and to try to put it together into a form that's going to hopefully make some really solid sense to you today. So in today's packet, you'll bring that to the forefront. I'm just going to use the top one here for an example. I've got Kathy Cover's packet. Now, there's nothing on the front of this that's confidential, but I do want to point out a few things. It's an interim performance review report. You will get 2 reports. This interim is going to provide you the feedback from the direct reports as well as from the stakeholders. It's going to provide you some historical knowledge from the previous 2009 report, and it's going to give you a solid baseline against and some information upon which to base your opinions in case you haven't had a lot of direct interaction with these individuals. In this case, the cover sheet says that Kathy was appointed June 1st of 1991. She's been in this position for 19.9 years. Congratulations, Kathy. At the bottom of the sheet there, I found this little graphic on the web. And it's really, there are 4 components to a performance management system. We're basically in the middle of this process. We're doing performance planning. We are also doing the reviewing and appraising of the performance. So it's kind of combined in those two units. Throughout the year, you should be doing coaching and continuous feedback. And again, the last item is recognizing and rewarding performance. And that doesn't necessarily have to be in a dollar amount, but I'm sure they would appreciate it if you felt so generous and inclined. So if you'll flip to the next page of your packet, you've got a table of contents here. Again, I tried to lay it out so that it made sense, so you can see all the different reports within this larger report. If you flip to the next page, you're going to see the status of the goals identified in the previous year, or in this case, the previous 2 years. So these were the goals that you set 2 years ago in conjunction with the direct reports. I think Michael Kaplinka Lehrer wrote up the final summary, which I included in your packet on each of these individuals. I teased out of there the goals, and in some cases there were many more goals than it appeared to be. So I listed those out. I do want to point out that there was some concern that we had changed the process. We have not changed the process. We did reconfigure some of these reporting tools to reflect the way that people were actually using them. In many cases, there were note sections that some people didn't use them at all. Other people felt that because there was a note section there, they had to fill it up. So what I did was pull all those notes forward and put them, consolidated them into one note field and identified them.
What am I looking at here?
You're looking at the status of the goals identified in the previous year.
Goal one was identified in the previous year, and then when it says goal one status, this is something that the person being discussed has put down as the current status?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I have already done some of this work up front. We sent out feedback forms to the direct reports. They gave us some feedback.
Okay. I got you.
Okay. So if, again, you'll just have to read through that, and that will tell you the status of what they've done over the last couple of years. Some of these goals may have not been accomplished, and they might be longer-term goals that need to be brought forward. But I'm going to leave that up to the committee to decide. If you'll flip to the next page, page 4 and 5, you're going to see the previous year employee competency previous year employee competency categories. These are the ratings that the employee gave themselves in 2009, June 30th of 2009. If you look right next to that so that you can compare side by side, it's color-coded, actually. Things with a blue stripe on top are employees or direct reports. The John Deere colors, I call it, the green and yellow are legislator actions. But in this case, it's an average. The legislator's page is an average of the following pages. So you can compare side by side your opinion versus this employee's opinion of themselves. So hopefully that's clear and unambiguous.
This is 15 legislators, is that right?
I'm sorry?
This is 15 legislators or committees averages?
This is all of the legislators that participated last time around, and it varied from 9 to 11. I don't think we have full participation. We did have full participation this time around on all the stakeholders, so I'm hoping that we can have full legislative participation so that your voices can be heard on this. So I'd like to ask you to flip to the next page. Pages 6 and 7 is the detailed report on Category 1 for technical. So you can see the individual ratings. The names are not identified. I was asked to keep those confidential. But these are the individual ratings that the legislators provided to me 2 years ago, as well as their comments. So I've combined that. If you look at page 8 and 9, you'll again see Category 2, leadership, individual rating. Pages 10 and 11 is Category 3, the organizational competencies, all the different ratings. Page 12 is the current year's employee competency category. So you got to see what they thought about themselves 2 years ago. Now you get to see what they think of themselves this year. And you're going to, again, use that information upon which to base your decisions as you fill out your paperwork. The next page, page 13, is the employees or the direct report's proposed goals and professional development objectives for the coming year. And that these pages are on each of the four direct reports. The final pages, 14 through the end, are the various stakeholder reports. You'll see that they're identified as internal and external stakeholders. Again, I didn't identify the individuals. I only let you know whether it was an internal or an external so you know where their perspective was coming from. And then a couple of the direct reports chose to provide additional information, maybe to address some of the goals that were identified previously, and I've included those on behalf at the request of those direct reports. So please read through your entire packet. I did want to point out that this is a confidential document. These documents should not be left lying around. When you're done with it, I can recreate these reports at any point out of the database. So when you're done with it, if you want to destroy it, you can shred it. You can give it back to me. I'll shred it for you. Whatever you want to do, it is confidential. It should be maintained secure. These are the lives of these direct reports, so it shouldn't become public information. It's for your use only.
Stephen, before you go on, so you and I noticed on a couple of these, you know, it's clearly an answer to a question. So I think this I'm looking at the stakeholder reports. Mm-hmm. The stakeholders had the same form that we all have, correct? To answer questions or to fill in.
No, the stakeholders had a different. Their report was totally narrative. So they were asked on these. Six different subjects and asked to provide additional comments as well. And you may want to change that in the future. Right now that's the way it is, and it was good feedback, but I had some feedback from the stakeholders that it was quite labor intensive for them to set aside the time to sit down and actually prepare written narratives. You may want to go with the graphic scale, give them 1 to 5, and then just give them a comment field so that they can provide whatever information they need to in addition.
Typically, what position do external and internal stakeholders have? Who are they? Not by names, but who are the internal stakeholders?
Internal stakeholders are typically staff that work directly for the direct report. Okay. External stakeholders could be community members, not-for-profit heads, somebody that the direct report has identified that they work closely with.
They identified them.
Yes, they identify them.
Thank you.
They could also be department heads. Within county government, but they're external, obviously, to their own departments. Dooley?
How many internal and how many external were there for each?
It varied, but I think the fewest was 2 internals and maybe 3 to 4 external stakeholders. I think 5 to 6 total, so it varied. Okay. So, in anticipation of May 30, I'm sorry, were there other questions on that? Okay. In anticipation of May 31st, what I'd like to do is to get you, I sent you the form in Microsoft Word format, so if you could open that and do one on each of the direct reports and send it back to me as an email attachment, I'll be able to copy and paste this into my database and it'll make it quicker to generate the reports. There's a lot of volume here with all the people around the table. And on May 31st, I anticipate having a full, complete packet of current year feedback, so it'll have the goals accomplished last year, but it'll have all of the current year's feedback, internal, external, your feedback, as well as the direct reports. That will give you a solid basis upon which to have executive session discussions and to do some goal setting. And I believe that Paula has volunteered to do some training prior to the June 7th legislative meeting, to your executive session on that day, to help you try to go through that process.
So, yep, during our legislature meeting, Paula will talk about goal setting. It's not a special meeting to be arranged.
So there's a couple other things. Martha will keep you on target as the chair of this committee as you're setting those goals, and she's going to try to get you to be really specific and create documents that are using the SMART process, specific, measurable, actionable, realistic and time sensitive, right? So that's the SMART method of setting goals. After that, the Direct Report Review Committee will schedule personal dialogues with each of these direct reports, and they will collectively discuss the goals that the legislature believes are priorities versus the goals the employees have proposed. They will come up with a set of final goals, and those final goals will then provide the basis, will provide what they will work toward accomplishing in the coming year. And then that will also be the beginning of the process for 2012.
And if you look at the first stapled document in your packet, the back part of that is a hard copy of the actual form we're using. So So, and Stephen said, if you'd rather do this in hard copy, that's, you know, you can copy this four times and then send it into them, or just do it. This is what you've gotten by email from Stephen.
I'll work with you individually if you need to do whatever you need to do to get this information into the database. If you want to schedule a time to stop in my office and just sit there and have me type it in for you, I'll do that. It doesn't matter to me. Just let me know what you need. I would prefer to get it as an email attachment in a completed Word document so I can just cut and paste, but I'll work with you.
Peter and then Carol.
I just wanted to make an observation when you talked about the difference between numerical responses or narrative. As someone who's written thousands of recommendations over my career for students, I know that you're a whole lot more honest, or at least I was, when writing narrative than when circling a number. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a natural desire often to give your students high marks, but it's hard to lie when you're writing sentences. Just an observation.
Nobody would lie here. Carol?
When we send back those documents, do you want us to rename them in any way? If you get back 15 documents all with the same title, are you going to...
Yeah, you should put your name on it and the individual that you're rating, so you'll have four reports coming back to me. Otherwise, won't be able to keep track of who's responded and who hasn't.
Your computer will replace one with the other. And
right.
So, for example, I opened it the other day, and it's a blank thing, and in the named category, I wrote Joe Mariana, and then I immediately saved it as Joe Mariana, May 2011. And so what you're suggesting is, in addition, put MR or put my name in the title of the document, right? So that then in my directory, I will end up with four files, and then that's easy to ship to Stephen. And
I'm asking, do you want them anonymous? Do you want them...
No, I want them identified, so I can follow up if I need to.
Okay.
But I will keep the information that you provide me confidential. So just like in this report, none of the legislators are named by name. I don't know if you can figure out who they are by what they said, but I won't be putting that in the report. But I'll need to know that so that I can follow up and try to gather as much data as I can.
It'll also help us to know who's responded and who to chase around.
Okay, maybe by our grammar you'll be able to identify us. And then my other question, Steve, this is an incredible amount of work that you've put together, and it's... And that we all had participated in last year. I want to be able to do it justice. We got the... So I guess I'm asking about the deadline. What drives your need to get this back? We got the email on Friday, which meant that for some of us, we didn't get it till Friday night, so we're not picking it up till this week. And I can't do justice to this level of detail in... by this Friday.
We set kind of a timeline because we are having a committee meeting
May 25th.
So we were going to try to have at least some of the draft reports available then for committee review, and then fine-tune it and tweak it however we needed to have it available for you on the 26th or 29th. But I could probably give you another weekend as long as everybody doesn't wait until next Tuesday or whatever, but send me what you can.
Thank
when you,
you
can.
I would second that, and as somebody, maybe it's my own bias, I'll do something just before the deadline, whatever the deadline is. So, I think that it's do the very best you can, and it's really important that everybody participate at whatever level that you can. Pat, or Dooley, and then Pat, I'm sorry.
I did not grasp how the final goals would be set. Would you just say that again, please?
It's my understanding that the subcommittee is going to have personal dialogue. You're going to set legislative proposed goals, so we're going to gather those proposed goals from everyone here. You're going to have executive session discussions on June 7th, and you're going to try to narrow down those goals on each of the direct reports. And then afterward, they will have personal dialogues with each of these individuals stating your preferred goals, also taking into consideration the direct report's goals as hopefully everyone's working together. You're all on the same page. That's the purpose of this exercise, is to make sure that everybody's in agreement. And then once that's resolved,
Martha will list out the final goals, whatever they may be, and that will become it. She will report back to you that this is what the subcommittee has decided.
Well, the panel. I mean, it's Pam, Jim, and Peter. Kathy Herrera had been on the group, but she's stepped off. So, you know, we will be meeting and digesting it and working on this, and all four of us meeting with each staff person, and then, you know, and then we will report back to you at the subsequent legislature meeting after our dialogues and sort of say, okay, this is what we came up with, and it'll be a review process. It won't be final until everybody, you know, looks at it and you know, makes additional comments. And I will say something about the timeline. It'll be a challenge to do four people on June 7th and then meet all four of them between June 7th and June 21st, and then another executive session on June 21st. This may stretch out. So it's really important that we not take any more time, because if this goes into, and it could, August or September, then we just can't let it slide into the budget season. We'll all be really sorry if it does. So it's already way too delayed because I didn't get it started in time. But so that's sort of the hope, to get us on a track and focus on it and then sort of be done with it, not drag it out.
My recollection in the previous go-round was that the goal setting at the end was not crystal clear from my perspective, and it wound up with goals that were written in text that was sometimes a little circular, and that's why I guess you extracted so many separate goals, and I hope that we can arrive at a smaller number of goals that are more simply stated this time. And if the legislature is going to have the last look at that, that's fine. I wasn't sure how it was going to play out this year.
Pat?
I just wanted to echo what Carol said and to say that this is a totally unrealistic timeline. For me, I know I won't be able to work on it the rest of this week, and typically I don't object to working on things over the weekend, but as it happens, I have plans, family plans, this weekend, and it's just, I can tell you it's not going to happen. So it just, you know, I don't think it's realistic to set such a short time frame.
Okay, let me suggest something then. Because as long as we have, like, if we have 4 times 15 of these to do, if we pick two people for everybody to focus on, and then we do that, then we can focus on the other two. Let's say, maybe that's a better way to go, so that say by next Wednesday we would have all 15 reports on those two people instead of some. You know, some on all four of them. Does that make sense? So, like, say for this next week, if everybody focuses on, let's see, alphabetically, Kathy Covert and who's next? Jonathan, Joe Mariana. Okay, so Kathy and Joe. All right. And then subsequent, we'll adjust the time period. But that way, then Stephen, you'll at least have a better shot at having the complete set for those two people
right
by next week.
I can
right?
Put that together.
Okay, so let's focus on Joe and Kathy first. Okay? Peter?
Thank you.
A couple of questions. One, have you already emailed us, the legislators, the attachments for doing this?
Last Friday,
okay, for all four people, that's number one. Number two, did we do this last year? I don't remember ever having seen this before.
It was done in 2009.
That's right. 2009, right. Okay. And the last thing is that I'm on this committee, but I'm going to be gone from June 1 to June 15, so I'm just telling you that. It's not maybe you ought to find a replacement for me. If I understood, there was a whole lot going on in the first half of June.
Anybody want to chime in? We want to volunteer? All right. Think about it. We'd love to have another member or two. And Stephen sent a blank form. He didn't send a separate one for each of the directs.
Right.
It's one form, okay?
He wants this filled out, you want this filled out electronically and sent back to you, is that right, or by paper, or what?
Either way, whatever works for you.
Okay.
And so Kathy and Joe, by next Monday.
Wednesday. That's what you said.
No, we're having a meeting on Wednesday to look at them. If you need to give Stephen and Jackie Thomas a little time to put them all together.
It's going to take me the better part of a day to compile all of the input of 15 individuals into a report and then get it printed out and print it up.
And then, because he wants to give us the results in our packets before the next... we have extra time. There's no... Because the legislative meeting isn't until the 7th of June. So this is sort of an extra week. Okay, Wednesday. Try to do it. If anybody can do it by Monday, that's great. And then move on to the other two while you're in the mood, while it's in your mind. In the mood, yeah, absolutely. And frankly, we do have an extra week. The first legislature meeting of June is the 7th, so there's really a little bit more space than usual that week.
My goal was to have the full compilation to the legislature on May 31st, so you would have a week to read through it, digest it, and you would be prepared to have executive session discussions on the 7th. That was in my calendar.
Because there's a holiday in there, et cetera.
Right.
All right. We're going to push this as hard as we can. And I know this is tough. I think it'll be easier once you get started than it sounds right now. So, and all this material that we've just been given, if you feel confident in making your evaluation without looking at any of this, that's up to you, too. That's not best practice, but there's a reason that we've given you all this. But everybody's on their own. You do the best that you can do.
I think you'll find it easier than it does sound, because much of it is that graphic scale. You're going to check out where you think they rate, and then there's, I think, 5 comment fields. So you can put as little or as much text in there as you want. But I think that'll go pretty quickly, actually, once you look at it. Other questions?
Peter.
It doesn't sound nearly so daunting as I thought it was. It doesn't sound as daunting as the weight of this packet, which terrified me when I picked it up. But typically, I would think this oughtn't to take very long for an individual legislator to fill out. I haven't looked at it, but it doesn't sound like it's going to take me more than the better part of an hour for the whole operation. Maybe, but I don't know.
My experience last time was... That's the right ballpark, an hour or two. Again, we have historical information to look at that we didn't before.
Right.
But
yeah, that's
except for Joe, it's really going to be tough to evaluate Joe. I don't know. What were you saying, Steve? I'm sorry.
I said that's the piece that was missing last time. We had no historical data. You're actually reaping the benefits of that last process. Now you actually have some data upon which to base your decisions. So that's a plus, or can be. But it doesn't have to be that difficult, I don't think.
And our hope is, before we forget what this process was like, that we will evaluate the process itself sort of by the end of the summer and have some great ideas about improving the process. All right? Thank you so much, Stephen.
And again, confidential. Please do not leave it laying around. If you need to destroy it, bring it to my office. I can try it. Thank you.
And thank you, Paul, for all your work on this, too. Okay. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Frank.
It's time for a break.
I'd like to withdraw Resolution C.
Okay.
And I'd like to ask a question about Resolution B, if you permit me. I have a it's on the consent agenda. And I have one word that needs to be revised. I hate to pull it off the consent to revise the one word.
Okay. We're pulling Resolution C off the agenda. Anything else to be added or withdrawn? Okay. Go ahead about B. Frank?
Resolution B in the second whereas. The second line, the word variances should be variations.
And that's
the only change. And I'll move the resolution if you want.
Well, that's in your packet and as revised,
as a revised
motion,
resolution.
So I was planning to read that as part of the consent agenda.
Okay.
All right. So, consent agenda, resolution A, budget adjustments, various departments. Resolution B, revised authorization to adjust HPRP homelessness prevention and rapid rehousing grant budget and execute associated contract amendments. Resolution D, award of 2011 new tourism initiative grant. Resolution E, authorization to execute construction funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation, bridge painting, various locations. Resolution F, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement with Clark Patterson Lee for design services, Coddington Road project. Resolution G, authorization of a five-year extension to the agreement with Cornell University for discount parking at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. And Resolution H, authorizing a supplemental consultant agreement with CNS Companies Incorporated to provide for photographic mapping and survey services in connection with the 20-year Sustainable Master Plan, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Can I get a motion? Pam,
now, I'd like to remove Resolution G.
G. Okay. And the one appointment, Rob Studeville to the Planning Advisory Board, and Frank moves, and Dooley seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That is unanimous. And it's almost time when our camera people really like us to break. I don't see any staff waiting for particular things. Okay. I'd like to ask for a five-minute recess because, frankly, I know that my report probably won't be short again. So let's come back here just after 7:30. Thank you.